Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Most of us have an idea what an autocratic state looks like, and we can often try to guess what it's like to live in one. Well, in recent times, the world's autocracies and their controlling leaders have managed to find a way to connect and interact in a network that aims purely to continue to control their people and to maintain their own power. Well, my next guest, a Pulitzer Prize winner, has set out to explain exactly how it all works in her new book. It's called Autocracy Inc., The Dictators Who Want to Run the World. And Anne Applebaum joins me on the line from London. Anne, it's a great pleasure to have you with us, and thank you for joining us on the programme.
Thank you for having me.
It's a fascinating book. It gives us a very different view of authoritarian states, one that I think we mightn't have considered before, because your book is very much, isn't it, about the connections and the networks that they are in, and we might not expect that those connections exist.
Yes, the book describes a network of countries who are not linked ideologically. So we're talking about communist China, nationalist Russia, theocratic Iran, Bolivarian socialist Venezuela. These are very different places who you wouldn't think of as being part of a single alliance, but they have a set of interests in common. Obviously, they're interested in paying power. These are often very rich people. They're interested in keeping their money, but they're also very interested in pushing back against us. And by us, I mean the liberal world, the democratic world, people who use the language of rights, of the rule of law, which is, of course, the language of their own opposition movements as well. And they feel the need to push back against that, to undermine it in order to maintain this network that keeps them in power.
So there's a bit of cognitive dissonance going on here. I don't care what you believe in, but I'm willing to support your drive to maintain power and control.
Yes, we don't want to see any of our fellow dictators undermined by a liberal revolution. We don't want to see anybody fall from power. We're willing to keep them in power through the investments of our companies, our state companies or our quasi-state companies. We'll sell you surveillance technology. We'll share tactics for how to repress dissidents. And in some cases, and we've just seen this in the war in Ukraine, we'll help you with your projects. So the Iranians are giving drones to the Russians to help them attack Ukraine. The North Koreans are selling ammunition. The Chinese are selling components and other parts for the Russian defense industry. So this is the war in Ukraine, which is a local regional war, supposedly, has the support now of a very broad base in the autocratic world.
So the autocracies are becoming more dependent on each other. Is that what's happening now?
They're more dependent on each other, and they're more interested in helping one another. I mean, it wasn't necessarily the case some time ago. You know, you would have thought that they belonged to different geographies, they had different interests. As I said, Iran's theocratic revolution, why would that be of interest to Russia? In fact, Russia had a conflict with Iran in the past and was worried, for example, about Iran gaining traction in building nuclear weapons. But they seem to have thrown aside those kind of cultural differences in favor of helping one another, as I said, stay in power and keep their money, and in opportunistically resisting all of their opponents, whether internal or external.
Mm-hmm. I watched an interview that you did about your book at the weekend, where you were talking about some of your friends who are activists and campaigners in some of these countries, and they are less heard now. Can you explain why?
Not so much that they're less heard, it's just that the tools that can be used to silence them inside their countries have become better. The tools of social media, which seemed so promising, a decade or two ago, it felt like the internet was going to make the world more democratic, give people more access to information. It turns out that they can be, the internet can certainly be manipulated. In China, it can be cut off. So the Chinese have a system which is of both online and offline surveillance. They can decide, or attempt to decide. Of course, some people break through, but they try to decide whose names can be mentioned, which ideas can be spread. And actually, a lot of the tools of modern communications technology have helped them rather than hurt them. A couple of decades ago, Bill Clinton gave a speech in which he laughed at the very idea that anybody was going to be able to control the internet. He said that's like nailing jello to a wall. Mm-hmm. And that's the opposite has proved to be true. So in fact, modern technology is beginning to help autocrats stay in power.
Right, as opposed to the reverse, which I think is what Bill Clinton might have expected to happen.
Well, I think we all hoped that, as I said, the spread of communications technology was an equalizer, that everybody would have access to information, that people in repressive societies would have a way to read alternative news. And to some extent, that's still true. And there's a lot of effort that's put into, whether through the use of VPN or other technologies, getting people access to news and information. But it turned out to be much easier to cut off and control the internet. And it also turned out to be much easier to spoil and manipulate online information. I mean, I think we all know the famous story of the Russians in the 2016 election in the U.S., but, you can see it in almost every election now. And, it doesn't take foreign autocracies. I mean, everybody's trying to, you have local extremists, local autocrats, local groups also try to manipulate the online world so that their views are heard and nobody mm-hmm. else's are.
Well, you use that great example of Belarus, where Russian journalists were sent to publish state propaganda because the journalists in Belarus were not doing the job properly.
Yes, this was in 2020 when there was a stolen election in Belarus and the opposition candidate won. Of course, the ruling party declared they'd won instead. And you began to have a real multi-level rebellion. You had policemen stripping off the insignia from their uniforms and army officers. They were all joining the popular revolt. And it also included state television journalists who resigned and said, we won't print lies. We won't put these false results up on the screen. And the reaction of the regime was, all right, we're going to bring in journalists from Russia, police from Russia. We're going to bring in an alternate core of repressive people and institutions, and we're going to put the rebellion down with the help of the Russians. And actually, since then, the Belarusians have had help from the Chinese investment. They have, the Cubans support them at the UN, and their repression and destruction of the a legitimate election has been impossible to dismantle it.
And do these regimes in Russia, in China, in Venezuela, in India, do they care what Western democracies think, and do they care about international criticism?
No is the short answer. One of the other things that's changed in the last decade or so is that these kinds of regimes have begun to feel they have a kind of impunity. You're not allowed to criticize us. We don't accept the language of human rights. We don't accept the language that's used by international institutions, by the UN or the OSCE or any of these other organizations. We believe we have the right to do whatever we want, just as we have inside our own country. Increasingly, we want the right to do anything we want anywhere. And so you now have the phenomenon, for example, of transnational repression. We were just talking about Belarus. If you remember a couple of years ago, an Irish airplane, a Ryan airplane, was forced out of the sky by the Belarusian dictator, forced to land. A dissident who was on the plane was taken off the plane with his girlfriend and put in prison. So they feel this sense of impunity. We can do what we want. We don't care about your rules. We don't care about your norms. We don't care about, the language used in Europe since the Second World War of never again and so on. The Russians are building concentration camps in occupied Ukraine. They kidnap children. They use random violence against ordinary citizens, and they expect to be able to do so without any repercussions.
I was interested to read John Simpson's review of your book in The Guardian, John Simpson, the broadcaster. And he said something which I'm really interested to get your view on, that he had great reason for optimism about the world until 2016, when things started to change. Do you think he's right in that assessment?
I mean, I would have put the change a little bit earlier. I think the moment of 2013 when Xi Jinping rose to power in China and created a new model of Chinese leadership, and 2014 also being the year when Putin invaded Crimea and felt very little repercussions from that. He crossed what was meant to be the ultimate red line in Europe. You know, he invaded a foreign country. He tried to change borders by force. There was a bit of condemnation and sanctions, but then, you know, people went on doing. I think those were very important turning points. I mean, I think it was legitimate to feel optimism in the 1990s when the world did feel very open. And when it wasn't just, you know, Europeans and Americans, it was the Russians and the Chinese who wanted their countries to be open and wanted to be integrated with the world. Mm-hmm. But I think we missed the moment when the mood changed and we didn't understand how our business and other engagements in the autocratic world were beginning to rebound on us, beginning to backfire.
Yeah, and then he goes on to say that the United States, the opinion of the United States, mattered just about everywhere on Earth, but now seems as intimidating as a scarecrow in a beet field. Does America not matter anymore?
I mean, it's a little too early to say America doesn't matter, but yes, I do think that the damage that Donald Trump did to, it's not so much the image of the United States, it's to the image of American democracy. You know, the idea that there was a functioning democracy in a very large and diverse country, and, you know, despite occasional issues, you know, it would somehow go on. I mean, for the first time, I think people suddenly looked and said, wow, it might not endure. It might be fragile. It might be weaker than we thought. And then I think the January 6th uprising in the Capitol only underlined that. You know, mm-hmm. Here was an American president seeking to reverse the results of an election. I mean, that's something you see in much weaker democracies, and indeed dictatorships. And I think that did a lot of damage to the image of democracy around the world.
And you were writing most recently in the Financial Times about how to push back against all of this, and you used the example of the campaign waged by Alexei Navalny, who has since died, of course, but his online campaign and the videos and the very well-produced journalism that he used to open people's eyes to what was going on. And you suggest that something like that, but backed by democratic governments, by media companies, by activists right around the world, is something that might work in an effort to deal with these autocrats and their regimes.
Yeah, I'm suggesting joining forces. The dissidents in the autocratic world understand their systems very well. They understand the ways in which our systems have been corrupted and weakened by the world of the kleptocrats and the autocrats. And I think there are far more ways in which we could think of cooperating. The degree to which, I mean, one of the things that's emphasized in the book is the degree to which our own political systems, our democracies, have also been weakened by the rise of autocracy, whether it's through the kleptocracy that sneaks in and you know, dark money that influences our politics, whether it's through the imitation of harassment tactics that we now see, you first saw in the autocratic world, you now see here, it's not just a foreign policy problem; it's also a domestic problem for us. And fixing our own systems can help change
all
things
right.
too.
And we need to leave it there. But thank you so much for talking to us. That's Anne Applebaum, and the book is called Autocracy Inc.: The Dictators Who Want to Rule the World.